Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their travel trailer, which they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. Well, we did it. We survived the wild annual adventure that is the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival. It was a great one again this year, and we would like to thank all of the people who were kind enough to help us make it so. On the Backyard Green Film side, we had our usual workforce along to make it happen. We bring a crew of two in for the live stream, two or three PAs in to do the running, and the third camera shots, and Rick and I usually run around and find victims for conversations and questions, of course. That crew I just described is a pretty bare-bones setup for something like this, believe it or not, and this is one of those location shoots that's really hard to cover with six. 10 would be ideal, but that's kind of a fantasy ball thought, so we'll just have to keep everyone running at top speed. There are others outside of our crew universe that make it happen, though. The Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association is incredibly helpful in connecting us with the right people on the logistics side. They also take turns at choosing victims, I mean representatives, from the board for us to interview every year. Now, that might seem like a formal thing, but the board is a really important part, in my opinion. The board of directors of any organization is a body that does lots more to direct the entity than most people are aware of, and that's especially true for a nonprofit. They're the ones who refine the ongoing mission of the organization and determine the goals and objectives for the year, and they direct where the money is spent, and they hire the person who will be in charge of that monstrous logistical challenge that an event like the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival ends up being. This is attended by, in person, 30 to 40,000 people every year. And the Wild and Woolly Weekend at the Dutchess County Fairgrounds in Rhinebeck, New York, is not the only thing this board does all year. This was news to me when we first found this event a few years ago, because that alone would be enough to keep anyone busy. But in any case, we've worked with nonprofit boards quite a bit, and this one has been really enjoyable to work with. Needless to say, we hope for lots more positive interaction in the future. The volunteers are the backbone of this event, and they were also fantastic, as usual. We talked about them in the past, so I won't belabor it, but this group includes the office ladies who hand out wristbands and confirm the stall spaces. It includes the breed barn volunteers who pack up their trucks and minivans and lug their sheep or goats or llamas or rabbits from near and far, just so people can put a furry face on that sweater. Okay, not literally a furry face on the sweater, though they can do that too, but you know what I mean. And when I said the part about lugging their sheep around, I will just say that yes, we literally have footage with critters large and small being loaded in and out of a minivan. Go to our YouTube channel if you don't believe me on that one. It takes a big heart to be willing to do that just to educate the public. But volunteers also include many kind souls, like the runners and the judges and about 47 other different kinds of people we've never met who make this whole thing run. This year, we had the chance to try a new thing or two. We did a fundraising, kind of a toe-in-the-water moment, which was incredibly successful, but I'll leave the details on that for next time. The other thing that was new and wonderful was that we had an official booth space. We had asked if we might have a spot for a camera on the midway across from the breed barns, with the thought that as all of those people walked by, maybe we could put up a live cam there for sweater shots and interviews. Dutchess County really came through in spades on that one. They gave us a wonderful tent right outside the main arena, including those see-through plastic siding panels that saved us in the blustery rain that first and second day. You might hear surrounding activity in today's podcast, because that's where the equipment auction occurs, and the sheep and llama breed shows, and the leaping llama event, and even the critter parades that trot past. This spot couldn't have been more convenient in terms of filming, and we got quite a few people to stop by and show off all their hard work in the glorious technicolor that's the fiber universe. Knitting, crocheting, felting, and 50 other crafts I've never even heard of were walking past our camera at every other moment. And our thanks again to Nena and the Dutchess County Board of Directors for a wonderfully supported 2023. And we very much look forward to another exciting October weekend in 2024. We came out of the far side of this festival still thinking fondly about the fiber universe particularly, and the human race in general. With 30,000 people running around, I consider that to be a minor miracle, because often when I get around people en masse, I get itchy and I start to look for the exits. I have to admit the festival this year was exciting in both a positive way and a little bit of a challenging way, but I think I better leave that story for the year-end wrap-up. I wouldn't trade it no matter what, though. It's one of my favorite weekends of every year, rain or shine, smooth seas or rough. Today, you'll hear from some of the people that you saw on our Backyard Green Films livestream and other conversations from the always exciting, always glorious New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, held in Rhinebeck, New York on the blustery weekend in October 2023. If you want to see them in person, hop on over to the livestream section of our YouTube channel, where anytime you get the urge, you can revisit this tightly woven community that loves to celebrate all things fiber. Well, I wanted to say thank you again for having us here this year, and I wanted to highlight some of the excitement here, but first off, if you could again, everybody knows who you are, Claire, but you're Claire.
I'm Claire Houlihan. I'm president of the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association.
And head of the Adams family here. No, you're not head of the Adams family.
No, no. The Adams family is a team participating in our Fleece to Shawl competition.
Okay.
They're from New York City, and they're... Their group name is Spin City. They've come the past several years, and they always go all out in their garb because you get extra points for having a theme.
You do.
This year, they're the Adams family.
It's not enough to have all these skill sets that you use. You have to dress up, too.
In previous years, they have been the Wizard of Oz. Even the weaver had knitted red ruby slippers.
And you said silver paint for the Tin Man?
Silver paint for the Tin Man.
Hopefully did not end up the same way the original Tin Man did with all that makeup.
We always enjoy seeing what the team from New York will be wearing.
Yeah, I Uncle Fester over there, that was Rick a couple years ago, and that, yeah, he shaved off his beard, and I came home one night and said, who is this man who's sitting in the driveway? It was very scary. But this takes a lot of work.
It does. Last year, they were the Blue Jays. They had a hand-painted warp, yep. So it looked like a Blue Jay wing. And I could hardly wait to see how this is sort of a sample of what they may wind up with this year.
Okay, so what's the whole process here? Do they get to go on their own? They have to make it in a certain time period? What's the contest?
Well, every team has five members. They mm-hmm. have a weaver, they have three spinners, and a plier. The plier also usually is an announcer. Mm-hmm. At the judge's behest, they will stand up and talk a little bit about the pattern they're using, mm-hmm. the fiber, and their whole concept. As you can see, for example, for this team, they have a weaving draft showing you the treadling and the threading that is used to create this shawl.
So if I'm not mistaken, a weaving draft is like an architectural plan, right? That's how it's going to be
it
constructed
is.
On
it
the
will,
plans.
The threading will show you which heddle your threads will go through, your warp threads.
You're already past me there, but go ahead.
The weft goes across, and the warp is the length. And then the treadling will show you what feet to use, what treadle to press, to make your sheds go up and down and create this pattern.
See, this is a whole different area of fiber that is just really interesting, but that rarely gets covered because it's kind of stationary. So, you know, you can go and take your knitting and go anywhere, but this baby, you got to sit somewhere, right? I mean, that's not exactly something you're going to take on the subway when you're bored, right?
This is true. All these looms come to the competition pre-warped, Extra points are given if you have a naturally dyed warp. And actually, we hand out a special award named in honor of one of our local guild members who has since passed away. He was very into natural dyeing. His name is Don Nervick. He worked at Vassar College. And
so pre-warped sort of means there's a part of this that's already done.
Right. The warp has been put on the loom. Mm-hmm. It's gone through the heddles. And the treadles have been tied up in such a way that when you press on one, the appropriate sheds will go up and down.
Okay, now I noticed there are there's multiple pieces of equipment here and multiple parts in the process. Would you just point out, kind of maybe go around the circle and say, this is what this person is doing and that's what we call them? Is this the card or is this the...
Well, firstly, each team starts with a clean fleece.
Okay.
But in order to take out the crimp, they will use these hand carders, and they will manipulate the fleece so that it is smooth, all the fibers are going in the same direction.
A little burrito ball there.
And this way, the spinner will be able to spin successfully, as you can see. Lynn is carding. And then we have Uncle Fester spinning.
takes a certain amount of patience to be able to spin with that on you.
Yes. Wednesday and Gomez are also spinning. And at some point, they will start plying the yarn. Some of the spinners will continue spinning singles, and then the plier will take two bobbins and spin them in the opposite direction, so in order not to take out the twist. And the plied yarn is what the weaver will use to create the weft.
How long do they have to do all this?
In the space of 3 hours, they have to weave a shawl that will be at least 18 inches wide and 72 inches in length.
I'm Nena Johnson, and I am the festival manager for the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival. It's my fifth year.
Festival manager, that just sounds like such a simple thing, but it's extremely complex.
It is.
So what does a festival manager do?
So this is one of the biggest sheep and wool festivals in the country, which means we get upwards of 30,000 people a year. It is the kind of undertaking that you would expect requires like a lot of people, a lot of minds, a lot of time, and it does. But we put this on almost entirely with volunteers. So being the festival manager means basically trying to create like a shape to all of that and being able to help direct folks to really get all the different jobs done in all the different venues on the fairgrounds here.
Because you have not just animals and breed barns, you have vendors that are wanting to sell the product, and you have events like the parade, the llama parade, and the sheepdog trials and things like that. So how did you have sub volunteers for the categories, I'm assuming, correct?
Sure, yeah, we do. We offer, every year we put together a really big listing. It almost looks like something out of a phone book or something that has all of the opportunities for volunteering, the hours that are needed, and it does range from everything from doing something that might be a little bit more sedentary, like working with our workshop check-in, helping to get things set up in there, to something a little bit more physical, like with the sheepdog trials, helping the people that are doing that bring their sheep in, get the dog situated, help them load out. Also, we have folks helping in our merch tent, which if anyone's been to the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, you will see a line that extends starting on Saturday morning and is there until sometime Sunday afternoon. So it takes a lot of bodies to help keep those people happy, get things done, get the merch off the tables. So there's all kinds of opportunities. And the places where we really need help would be, I would say, in that merch tent. And that's a chance if you like interacting with folks. That's a really great place to be. Again, because there's so many folks coming in and out of there. Working with kind of the special events that we do each year. So the sheepdog trials, this is the first time it's been back in a while, or demonstrations rather. So we haven't had people kind of locked in to help us with that. So if you're interested in working with animals, animals or just sort of being outside in the early morning here in the fairgrounds, which is always, even on a rainy day, beautiful, misty, gorgeous October time to be in New York. That's a great opportunity. And then we've also got the lamb roast, which we're not doing this year, and that is just something that we can't do without volunteers. That's been gone for a couple of years, and I know that's really important to our membership and our producers to show that we're celebrating fiber and textiles, but also the other part of the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association is the folks that are raising sheep for consumption. So I'm hopeful that next year we'll have more volunteers lined up for that so that we can offer some really great examples of ways to prepare and support these lamb producers that are in our region.
And it's not specific to any age group, right? Because I know I have our niece usually comes in with us, and she does running. And it is hugely critical for her to just run from one camera to the office and back, or go to the car and get batteries, so that you might need all levels of skill and maybe all ages. The ladies in the office sit there, they come back every single year, and they're a blast in there. I would sit
absolutely just for fun. Yeah, our vendor office is definitely a cast of like returning characters every year. They're so amazing, and our vendors look for them. But yeah, for sure, it's great having you know, for volunteers, we're looking for people that are 16 and over, and so it is great to have folks that are like excited to move around a lot, maybe excited to help with some setup. A lot of times for the setup, I'm here on the grounds starting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the week of the event. And we've got these great companies that we work with to drop off all our equipment. But, you know, we're also constantly having to move stuff around. It would be great to be able to have more folks to call on to help us with that sort of thing. So if you like getting, you know, down and dirty and like lifting heavy things, I have the job for you for sure. But like I said, there's also opportunities for things that are a little bit more maybe observing based and not having to there's something for everybody basically. You know, you can help in any way
definitely
that you're able.
Definitely. And that starts, so it's a Friday here, and obviously everybody's setting up in the breed barns here. So you might need breed barn volunteers coordinating. You might need somebody helping with the equipment auction and checking in, somebody helping in the office, maybe somebody manning the front gate. How many people do you have here?
In terms of helping right now, you know, we look for somewhere between 50 and 75 volunteers.
75 people.
We definitely don't have 75 volunteers this year, which is, again, one of those things where we just need more folks. I saw, you know, there's a lot of blank spaces on that form of people just not knowing that they have all these opportunities or just aren't able this year. And then just in terms of our committee and the people that put this on who are volunteers, there's about 16 people that work year-round with me to plan for this every year that are not paid. They're fully volunteers. They have day jobs and families and live elsewhere. So looking even, just in the breed barn here, this is, you know, has a lot of complications to it. Animals coming in and out, making sure that we have, you know, bales delivered for all the different stalls that are in here, having educational materials out, getting the breed talks associated with this barn together. And that's all entirely done by folks that are volunteering their time because they love it.
And their animals at times too, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a very complex event, and you always need volunteers. Tell me, if people did want to volunteer, how would they get a hold of you?
So the best thing would be, it wouldn't be me, they'd be actually getting hold of our volunteer coordinator, which is David Russo. And you can do that by emailing him at listmanager@sheepandwool.com. And if you have any questions or it's, you know, confusing to you at all, you just go to our website, sheepandwool.com, and you'll see information there.
Okay, delightful.
All right.
Fantastic. And you guys have a great website as well.
You
have phenomenal information up there.
Yeah, a lot of info up there year round. So.
Okay. This is the most relaxed I have seen you ever. I know you actually got a night's sleep last night, but from here out, it's
pretty
busy. But
I can tell you that my phone is ringing right now in my
pocket. I know it is.
It's making me a little bit tense.
Very much aware of that. Thank you so much.
Sure thing. Thanks, Alara.
Hi, I'm Heather. This is my 2023 Rhinebeck sweater, which ended up being a dress. It is the Stumble Dress by What Lydia Made, and I used Junk Yarn, Superwash, Merino Fingering Weight Yarn. I did a rough calculation. I have over 100,000 stitches in this dress. And next year I need to scale it back.
How long did it take you to make it?
It took me about 2 months to make it. Just a lot of just going around in a circle for a really long time. The skirt portion, each row of yarn is 500 stitches around. So That took a long time. And you can find me on Instagram at charmknitty.
Could you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Teresa Walker. We have a small family farm in Durham, New Hampshire, which is on the seacoast. And for about 15 years, we've raised Romneys and natural colored sheep. And it's something we enjoy doing as a family. It's something we enjoy doing for many reasons. One of them is this competition, like we have here, this showing, you know, taking your sheep out on the road and comparing them to the sheep that are raised by other people is something that we've really enjoyed. So the competition of it, when our son Tim, who joins us, was younger, I used to talk with friends and they go, why are you doing this? And really, you know, they were at soccer meets every weekend, right? Or they were at ice hockey competitions.
Yeah, both soccer
moms.
Well,
this is what we did as a family, right, is take our sheep out on the road. And because it provides an enormous opportunity to educate people about not only being a shepherd and about sheep and about fiber and wool production, but also about that working landscape that we feel as a family is really important to defining New England, especially New England, where farms are small, they're embedded in communities. It's not like out west where you have, you know, hundreds or thousands of acres and communities that are set up with, you know, farming centers. Really, New England history for hundreds of years has been small farms embedded within a town, surrounded by other land use activity. And where we live in Seacoast, New Hampshire, our landscape is really defined by mills on tidal rivers. And those mills were put there because of the tidal rivers, but they were also there to process this raw material that was coming in. In some cases, it was cotton coming from up south, from the south, but often it's from wool, from fiber, coming from animals that were raised in New England. And so that institutional viewshed, that memory is still with us every day if we drive around New Hampshire. You know, most towns we pass through in the seacoast have woolen mills there, some type of mill, which just kind of lays that history down for the fact that, like, 1845, there were about 100 and I used to have a poster with this, but there was like 150,000 people in New Hampshire and almost 500,000 sheep. So those stone walls, those mills, that landscape of New England, which is defined by rolling hills with a stone wall and woods, that really is a shepherd's landscape. It was created by shepherds a long time ago. And so then you fast forward to today, where I think people are often nostalgic for that kind of viewshed. You know, they see it in calendars or they read about it in books. But the fact is that activity still takes place, and this is an example. The Sheep and Wool Festival is a great example of the fact that people are still doing this activity and that it's something that's worthy of people's support.
And when you talk about the shipping line, mm-hmm. Now, are we shipping out or in at that point in time when you have all of these little farms that are set up next to the shipping quarters? Are you going east or west or?
No, I think they were making it right there, right? That's where the population center was for this part, you know, for our country, was along the eastern seaboard. So they were manufacturing for use right there.
Okay, yeah. Now that makes sense because at that
That's
point
where the
time,
population was. Yeah. Yes. It was kind of, you know, it was manifest destiny in going west that led to the demise of these farms, these small New England farms, right? I think, you know, if what I remember from history is correct, they came back from Civil War and discovered, wow, you could actually farm on land that wasn't embedded with granite like it is in New England. You know, you could probably put a shovel in the ground and it could go more than 4 or 5 inches before it struck something.
Yeah.
So that and the change in transportation and how goods could get to market, obviously, too.
That infrastructure is the big thing that always makes it or breaks
it. Yeah, that infrastructure, where we still have to all talk about it today. New England certainly was a real center for fiber and wool and shepherding.
This sweater is the Rosebud Cardigan by Tania Scalabu, I think, if that's how you pronounce her last name. And it's crocheted, and the fiber content is, this is Cake Wool, Alyssa Baptista. And the colorway, I'm not sure the colorway. This, the gold one, is La Vienne Me by Amy. And this is the Corey Worstead Yellow Brick Road. Yeah, so, yeah. Sure.
Oh, it's like a shrug.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Amy Palmer of Daisy and Clover Designs, and I teach people how to make their knitwear fit, how to knit, how to crochet, how to go from a raw product to a finished garment that they're happy to wear.
Okay, now that's something that I really think is a fantastic thing, and I'm really excited to be able to actually visit a workshop, because workshops are a big thing that goes on here at Rhinebeck,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's a whole building and tents outside full of people doing workshops.
Yes, there are. So we're here on a Friday, which is before the main event starts, but you're doing a class on how to make your sweater fit, basically, right? What is it called?
So the class that I'm teaching today is called Knit Your Best Fitting Sweater Ever. So last year, I taught a sweater class called Knit a Sweater That Fits. And for 75% of the population, that's all the class that they needed last year. But there's 25% of the population for whom there's more to it. If I take a standard knitting pattern and I knit my sweater exactly to pattern, but my stitches are a little bigger or a little smaller, I'm going to get a sweater that could be, say, 4 inches bigger or 6 inches smaller. And so one of my students once said to me, when I start knitting a sweater, all my friends get excited because they know it's going to fit one of us. We don't know which one. It's like a sweater lottery. And so last year dealt with how do you control who that sweater is going to fit. But this year, 25% of the population doesn't fit the fashion industry average for proportions in the upper torso.
Now, I don't know if that's because we've all been at COVID, but I will say that my grandmother and my mom were knitters, and they were good knitters, so they knew how to adjust. And we're kind of all busty women in the family on my
yes.
mother's side.
Yes.
And when you go to buy clothing, it's very difficult because you have to fit that, and that doesn't necessarily fit the rest of you. So am I understanding this correctly? You're kind of judging the pattern. You're tailoring your sweater, right?
You are absolutely correct, because patterns are written as though full bust is reflective of shoulders. That skeletal frame being related to bust. And that, we all know that's not true.
Yeah.
So at that point, we reverse engineer how patterns are built, how they're written, because today's patterns are written so that you could practically be a machine and just follow the instructions and get a sweater. But they're gonna be that fashion average that I was talking about. So if I want a sweater that truly fits me and I'm not fashion average, I can't mechanically read a pattern and say, here's my sweater. So instead, I have to look at it and say, here's where I can tweak it. Old-fashioned knitters didn't even knit from patterns. They just said, I want it to be, about that big, okay. Or I need to make it bigger or smaller at any given part. And they just intuitively did it.
Today, so now you're doing math.
Today we're looking at math, yes, because I do have an engineering background.
Oh, you do?
It does show in classes. And so I'm all about, well, if we can add 4 stitches, that adds an inch, and that gets something that fits you. Where are we going to get that while making it look good?
Okay.
Because you can't just randomly stretch, add. Knitwear will stretch to a certain extent, but there's a limit to how far we can go.
And you want it to look correct. You don't want it to look stretched in one area or not.
Exactly.
Noticed you have this this beautiful selection of sweaters here. So, I mean, that's going to be a very different type of an adjustment on a sweater with buttons versus a sweater that is meant to hang a certain way, right?
Yes, along with the shoulder shaping makes it entirely different. So
yes.
You've got different types of shoulders. You've got set-in sleeves, you've got drop shoulder, and you've got something called raglan that will have the lines that come mm-hmm. out at a diagonal. All of those sweater types have different things that you need to do to make them fit. Some of those sweater types are more in vogue right now than others, but they're all things that you see out there. And then when you throw on top of that, as you knit and crochet, you can put different stitch patterns on it. So the different stitch patterns require you to say, how am I going to do this for this type of shoulder while not interrupting my stitch patterning and making it obvious what I've done?
Hi, my name is Sydney. A lot of folks in the knitting community know me as Squidney Knits. Everything I am wearing is hand knit by me. This is a wool from Norway, and this is Brooklyn Tweed Peary, and then this is a mercerized cotton. And most of what I'm wearing are from true vintage patterns. So my top is from a 1930s jumper, and the skirt is from a 1947 pattern. And the bag is my design that is part of Squid School of Vintage Knitting, which is where I lead a bunch of folks to victory with vintage knitting projects.
I'm Bruce McCord. From Milan, New York, which is only a few miles up the road right there.
Yeah.
I am one of the directors of the Sheep and Wool Growers here in Dutchess County, and also a volunteer here at the Sheep and Wool Festival. And one of my main responsibilities is overseeing the equipment sale, and we've hosted that for the last 5 years. And each year it seems to grow, and there are some very unique pieces that we see from year
to
year.
Yes, there are.
It's never
are.
The same.
No, it's not. But it's kind of an exciting thing. And you're here, we're here, what, 7:40, 7:45 in the morning to set up for this thing. But it's Friday here. So tell me kind of what goes into your side of things. Because Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association is the organization, the nonprofit that puts on what we all call Rhinebeck, or the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, right?
That is correct. Yep.
Okay.
We're a pretty active group. There's probably 60 different shepherds here in the county. But we do have a core group of volunteers that actually run the festival itself. And I think probably you'll see during the course of the filming here that there are many different aspects of the festival, not just the equipment, not just the animals, but there's demonstrations, there's a fleece sale, there's workshops that actually instruct people on doing different fiber projects. So there's a lot of different facets to the festival itself right here. And we run for 2 days. It's only 2 days, but we have a pretty good following of 30,000 people that come every year.
Yes, you
just
do.
To see the festival, take in the activities that we have here, purchase equipment, fleeces, what have you. So it's a jam-packed weekend it is for us.
Yes, it is. And it's interesting to me that you first went into the shepherds. We have the shepherds here, you said. Now, we have the breed barns, and you have a couple of breed barns. We have all kinds of things, sheep and goats and llamas and alpacas and just all kinds of things. So we get the shepherd component, but the board is really focused, if I'm not mistaken, on the educational component and having people be able to learn what it takes to get something from the farm to the sweater, right?
Absolutely. And not only here at the festival we do that, but also at the Dutchess County Fair, that we try to educate the people, because how many generations are we away from the farm? I mean, we all can look back in our families, and somewhere back, several generations, everybody had a garden, everybody raised a few animals in their backyard, or actually had a farm right there. And now people just don't understand where their food comes from.
Yes.
And fiber also.
Yes, that's okay. Very much the case. There's that old saying, once a year you need a tax preparer, once a year you need an attorney, but every single day you need a farmer, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
the case.
Absolutely,
for that's
sure.
The case. And there are some things that, you know, that time concept that we just kind of spoke of, once a day you need a farmer. It's interesting that much of what you're doing here in this equipment barn is something that is almost timeless in a way, right? I mean, I don't want to say that, but you kind of are. This equipment has had many lives.
Absolutely, and it's kind of interesting for myself, as different pieces come in, I'll ask the individual, is there some history about this piece of equipment, whether it's a spinning wheel or whether it's a carder or something like that. And most generally, people will stop and say, you know, I've had this thing for 40 or 50 years right here. I've spun with it, you know, and for me, it's quite interesting. But there is a lot of history behind a lot of these pieces right here. And some of the pieces date back 150 years or better right here.
It's a little time capsule, isn't it?
Absolutely. It really is. So okay. It's quite interesting for me.
Well, I think it's fascinating. And you would know. You've been in, your family's been...
We've done sheep since 1980.
Yes, okay. You have three generations that have participated here. Is that
do.
Right?
And they're still active in sheep. They'll all be here over the course of the weekend. They're quite heavily involved with 4-H, and that's where we started with sheep also. My daughter and son, they were in 4-H for a number of years, and now their children are in there, and even the great-grandchildren are coming up through, and they've started showing sheep this year. So,
that's,
yeah, three generations.
Yeah.
It's a yearling Herdwick ewe. She's showing the typical coloring of the dark gray body with the white face and legs. So we've been raising Herdwick since 2012. We bought in four ewes that were 62.5% Herdwick and two rams that were 75% Herdwick. So we've been breeding those together and swapping out rams. We did one AI project about 4 years ago, and that brought us up to 85% Herdwick. She's about 77. We're in upstate New York, outside of Albany, in the town of East Bern, and we're known as Helder Herdwick Farm. And Herdwick are derived from the northwest area of England, in Cumbria, or the Lake District. They are known to survive winters upwards of 3,000 feet in this fleece with no shelter. There's four different fibers in their fleece. There's wool, a guard hair, kemp, and a heterotypic fiber. The heterotypic fiber reacts to the environment they're in, and when they get too warm, they shed it out. They are born black in the spring, usually March, April. They're born a solid black. By August, their faces and legs have turned to white. So they look like, I call them a tuxedo sheep, because they're black-bodied with white legs and a face, very sharp-looking. We first discovered them through a PBS program about border collies. And I saw these black sheep running down the hills with these border collies and looked them up, and that's how I found them. And they'd been introduced, the genetics, in Oregon in 2007. The meat was Queen Elizabeth's favorite. Ours is very mild. In England, they refer to it as a very unique, strong-flavored meat, but they eat a completely different diet. I know I'm talking about the meat. They get basically sweet grasses on our land, legumes. They will browse if I let them into, we do rotational grazing. If I let them into a paddock that has some brush and clover, they will trample the clover to get to the brush. They prefer to chew on twigs, and they do very well on it. She's been on pasture. You can feel how round she is. So this is our fifth year, sixth year? Anyone know off the top of their head?
2018.
Sixth year.
This is our sixth sweater. So basically way back in the day, I had two yarn friends and they both were like, you want to do a design? And I was like, sure, why don't we do it together? And then we thought, well, why don't we do a little knit along? And then we'll see if anybody else wants to knit with us and we can meet up at Rhinebeck and wear our sweaters and take a big group photo. So 6 years ago, and now we're still here doing it.
And your name again?
I'm Andrea Mowry from Drea Renee Knits.
And the knit along group is?
Tessellated.
It changes every year, but this year it's the Tessellated Rhinebeck Knit Along.
Okay, so Tessellators, everybody hold up your hands.
Yay! Tessellators!
Now, okay, I just got to ask,
yes.
Knit along, does that mean you all get in the same room and knit?
So it can mean it in a lot of different ways, but basically you pick either a pattern or a theme and you all knit together in that way. So for us...
It's stripes this year, obviously,
it's this specific pattern and it's either in a vest or a pullover.
Okay.
And so we released it in July and then we all knit it virtually together through like Facebook, Ravelry, and then we come here to see how it looks in person.
Okay, obviously I was teasing about... Oh, okay.
Well, a lot of it.
And this really works out though. So obviously I was teasing about the stripe thing, but there's a little variation in
by the color. There's two of us that have been doing this from the start. There's a company called Spin Cycle Yarns, and then there's me, I'm the designer. And their yarns are very special because they change color throughout. So even if you use the same colorway I did, it wouldn't look the same. So they all vary as they're knit up. And then there's other amazing yarn dyers in here, including Rochelle from Moondrake, who's up there, and the Farmer's Daughter Fiber, who is in here.
So, and you're yarn too. Okay, who is the traditionalist in this crowd?
In what way?
You have a pattern that goes out, that one's going to be always knitting that way, and then who is the wild card that likes to knit?
Rachel Price! Yeah, two dyers.
Rachel.
He's the dyer.
So I will design the pattern. This one is our major modifier, who will then take that pattern and be like, should I make it a cardigan?
I followed directions this year.
You did. You did. Yeah. This year she went wild and you did it. But she's the one who will 100% make it her own, typically.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's a major modifier. That's a bumper sticker or a t-shirt.
Major modifier.
Okay.
So you are going to be here all weekend long or just today?
Right now is the middle of our big meetup and we do a giant group photo.
Okay.
And then we'll just wander around. Tomorrow's our slow shop day.
So who picks what next year's pattern is, or do you take a vote?
She designs it.
I make up the pattern.
She's the designer.
Yeah.
So I make it up, and then I just have to hope everyone likes it and knits it with me.
All right, and I'm going to ask you to just kind of individually answer this. We are originally livestock people, so we love the breed barns, and I don't know if you all have visited the breed barns.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite fiber? Your favorite fiber animal that you would like to knit with?
Merino.
Merino.
Gosh. Angora.
All right, Angora?
Cashmere.
Cashmere. Okay, I got some connections for you if you want that.
CVM.
Okay, CVM Ramadale, right, Craig, for people that don't?
Cashmere.
Okay, I'm going to steal this from you.
Yeah, please do.
Moment, and I don't want to pull your hair there, sorry.
Cashmere.
Cashmere.
Cormo.
You stick with one? Really? You're a major modifier.
Just
that's such a letdown.
Cormo right now, right now it's my favorite.
Okay, Cormo. Next.
I like them all. There's not a fiber I don't like.
You're the traditionalist, obviously.
I like them all.
Oh, cashmere is the best.
All right.
Merino.
Okay.
Haworth.
Ooh, that's interesting.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please ask your friends to join us. Please also feel free to post any comments or questions to our social media sites. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under Backyard Green Films. Thanks again for listening.
We'd like to thank the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association for having us back again this year, especially Claire Houlihan and Nina Johnson. If you'd like to find out more about this event, please visit sheepandwool.com and all the other links in the bio. We'll see you next time with another adventure. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2023.